Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Tasha Wodak.
I'm like, let's settle down, Mom. I ran the Olympic standard. Doesn't mean I'm going, but like, yeah, I was still in shock and awe because I never really saw myself as like a Canadian record holder. I just couldn't believe that that is something that I had just done. And I still didn't see myself as that good. Like it was so weird. It was so surreal. So it took a long time to get used to like, oh yeah, it's the fastest any woman's run a 10K on the track. That was me. That's weird.
On this episode of The Rundown, I speak with endurance athlete and competitive Ironman age grouper, Tony O'Keefe. He found running when he joined the military as a way to lose weight and reduce stress. He's completed over 30 Ironmans, 9 Ultramans, and the Ride Across America 3 times. Tune in to find out how he got to this point and what fuels his inner fire to succeed. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown? Running with WRG and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, the Western States is arguably one of the hardest 100-mile trail races in the country, and Jim Walmsley just won it again. For the second year in a row, Jim Walmsley took home the victory. Last year, he had a time of 14 hours and 30 minutes, crushing the course record. This time, he shattered his own record by 21 minutes, even more impressive than the back-to-back wins. Walmsley runs with impressive company. Had he not taken the win, his training partner and teammate would have. Jared Hazen came through in 14 hours and 26 minutes. Not a result to sneeze at. Walmsley says, the two help elevate each other. They train hard and take it very seriously. Their goal was to get the fastest times at Western States, and that's just what they did. Have you heard of the documentary Breaking 2? In it, marathon world record holder Eliud Kipchoge attempts to break the 2-hour mark on the marathon, but falls 25 seconds short. Well, Kipchoge is at it again, this time in Vienna, Austria. Vienna may not be the first place that comes to mind when thinking about a fast track, but it just so happens that the conditions in October are ideal for a record like this to be broken. If this record is going to be broken, many believe Kipchoge is the runner to do it. The marathoner has dominated the sport. He has only lost one out of the 11 races he has competed in. Some believe the record will not be broken anytime soon. Research has shown that if times progress the way they have over the last 60 years, the sub-2-hour barrier will only be broken in 2032. History could be made in October. We can't wait to see what happens. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run.
I thought my coaches were the only two people in the world that I would ever meet to do an Ultraman, but today I get to sit down with another one of the competitors who have faced that daunting challenge with Tony O'Keefe. So welcome to The Rundown.
Hey, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us into your lovely home here in Tremblant.
Delighted to have you.
It's awesome. I got the pleasure of meeting you actually through Cat and Kev, so that's that might have been like 3 or 4 years ago, but they speak very highly of you and...
You're talking about the legends, Catherine Calder-Becker and Kevin Becker.
That's it.
You bet.
Yeah. So usually, like, just to start things off, I like to hear about kind of your childhood and obviously like you're into triathlon now and stuff, but what was it like growing up and were you athletic as a kid?
When I was a kid, yeah, you know, we played road hockey and I played organized hockey till I was around 12 or 13. in those days, that was in the 70s. I grew up just on the shore of Montreal, the South Shore, I guess it'd be of Montreal, in a town called Chateauguay. And it was primarily a blue-collar immigrant town, half Franco and then the rest of us immigrants. But the folks that I went to high school with were all mostly into athletics. So football and hockey were staples. And kayak canoe was another one. Chateauguay had a robust kayak canoe club, and a couple of those athletes went on to the Olympics. And that was motivating. From I grew up with four sisters, no brothers. So you know, my role models were boyfriends of my sisters. And you know, I was just telling my daughter this the other day. You know, my by being raised by women, they taught me how to be a man. Because, you know, my sisters didn't suffer any fools. And I hear them. I could hear them and their friends talking about different guys. So I knew what not to do, if you get my drift. I myself, I wasn't an athlete, but I saw the respect that that athletes won in their social life and then later on in their professional life. So deep down inside, I always wanted to be, you know, good at something. That's how it started. And I didn't play football. I didn't play hockey once I was a teenager. I got into some clever mischief for a while. I didn't finish high school. I went to a university the hard way, the school of hard knocks. But I found myself in the military by the time I was 19. And again, there's another culture that that appreciates and values physical fitness, and that was where I saw, okay, there's a return on investment here, and I started running, just as a way to de-stress and lose some weight, quite frankly, because once I hit my 20s, I found, oh man, the weight's coming on here a lot quicker than I can take it off. But running was a way to manage stress, and that's how I got into it.
Awesome. And did you, like, I have two sisters, so I completely kind of understand what you're saying there with the, like, learning how to be a man, like how to treat, you know, with your mom and two sisters and stuff like that. It's interesting you said that, for sure. And also, so when you found running, what kind of feeling did that give you, and how did that progress quickly for you, or did it take kind of, like, did you jump into racing or anything like that, or was it just purely recreational?
When I first started running, you know, I ran around the block, and I thought I was that was a monster. You know, to me, holy smokes. Of course, in my misspent youth, I also smoked cigarettes, which wasn't helpful. But at the time, I didn't know. And running was, a distressor. And I still remember to the day when I joined in the military, running on the track outside the barrack block. And I went around four laps. And I didn't realize, you know, I wasn't in it for distance or for competition. I didn't follow competition. But I just thought, okay, well, you know, let's get to five, and let's get to six, and let's get to seven. And that was in Kingston, Ontario. And as I say, to the day, I can remember the first time running outside on the road, and the freedom, you know, like, oh man, I can do this. And I've always enjoyed it. I've always enjoyed running. I just feel like a certain amount of freedom.
Is that something you did alone? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever kind of get into group running or anything like that? Or
I did as my military career blossomed. You know, I found myself up in Cold Lake, Alberta, and with a couple of young kids, and the only way to get out was to I joined a little group that ran on Sunday mornings, and I met a few guys, and then, you know, it progressed from there. But the socialization aspect of it was how I learned about, you know, I remember my first 10K that I went into, and these sorts of things, and the progression, and just looking up to folks who were very good at it. I saw, okay, well, this isn't just an accident. You know, these folks consciously train in and around their work and family life. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a good model. Very good for me, because And I was vastly immature in my youth. I could be easily distracted, and so I found that to be a very helpful anchor.
And I'm sure, like, being in the military too, it's like there's a certain level of like discipline too. So any kind of like training that you're doing too, kind of, does it complement that? Like, does having that ability to learn those disciplines translate to training?
You would think, and you raise a good point. I hope you don't mind me speaking a little bit about it, because to this day, and folks, I don't think realize it, it's not the results that people respect in me, and it's not the fact that I can ride a bike well or not, or swim or whatever. And I don't think folks realize it. What they respect in me is discipline. Now, there's a difference between discipline and obedience. Obedience is what gets you through the military. You know, you have to follow orders. That's not discipline. Discipline is being able to stand up for yourself when no one else agrees. That's discipline. Discipline is saying what you mean and meaning what you say. And so in the military, the difference between those two, they're not mutually compatible. Why do I say that? Well, if I haven't already tipped my hand, I wasn't a very obedient teenager. And so I don't think I've ever been a follower. And that's pretty crucial in being in the military. But what happened, and I saw it in my military career, was because I was disciplined and principled, I was accepted, as opposed to just being blindly obedient. And that has helped me in my life. And I like to make the marker between those two attributes.
Mm. Thanks for sharing that. That's some good insight for sure. And how did the running evolve? And I know you're like, I know you as a triathlete, so mm-hmm. I'm just curious to see, like.
Oh, so that's a good. I used to run, like I say, I used to run just as a stress relief, and I started running at while I was going on courses in the military at lunchtime as a way to kind of de-stress. And I felt like even to this day, you know, when I go for a run or even a swim at lunchtime, it's like I've reset the clock. You know, I can go back to work in the afternoon and I've got a whole new bunch of energy. I didn't realize what was happening physiologically. It just morphed that way. As I started to get into it, of course, I ended up with an overuse injury almost immediately because I didn't know what I was doing. And so I didn't want to stop now because I was seeing returns on investment. I was, you know, maintaining a good, healthy physique, and I was able to keep up with some of the stronger fellas, both men and women in the military. And I didn't want to let that go. So I broke out the bike with the baby seat on it, and no kidding, and started riding up and down one of the hills. I was at that time I was living in North Bay, Ontario. I just ride up and down the hill until my knee would come around. It turns out it was a minor injury, but I just really had no idea what I was doing. Now I saw a sign in the base gym for a local triathlon. The base was going to host this local triathlon, and this was I think in the 80s, and I didn't know what it was. You know, this is a swim, bike, run. I just thought, oh man, that's heroic. That's got to be, you got to be a stud to do that. I didn't know anybody certainly none of my friends. So I entered it, and I went to the pool, and you know, I got 25 meters in, and when I was a kid, I had swam growing up, not competitively, but our family belonged to a recreational pool. So I was kind of comfortable in the water, but 25 meters turned into 50 meters turned in. And so I finally got myself up to 1,000 meters, and that was the requirement. And I went into this triathlon. Now I don't think I was last, but I was probably second last. And I had no idea. I just thought finishing this thing was going to be a delight. I changed right after the pool. I put on, you know, the kit was unbelievable. Leather chamois cycling jersey.
No.
I don't know how many gears were on the bike because this thing was, you know, parked behind the lawnmower and the whippersnipper in the garage, but only two speeds worked. So I realized, okay, well, I don't know how to fix a bike, so I'm not using any of the gears. That was the day. There was no clipless pedals or anything like that. Well, the top three guys in that race were also on the base. So I got to know, I made fast friends with these guys. But I just loved it. I'll never forget the day. You know, my kids, in fact, I only had one, you know, so this was 89 maybe. Number two hadn't come along yet. And after the race was over, my wife and baby son, come on, we got to go. We got things to do. I mean, no one knew. We didn't know what we were doing. But I had numbers on my arm. And I got a T-shirt. And I was so proud of that thing. I mean, my chest hairs were growing through that shirt. I never took it off. I wore it to the squadron because none of my squadron buddies did this. And it was a nonverbal expression of strength and commitment. And you just can't fake that, you know. And to this day, I mean, it's not a talking problem. It's a doing problem. And you can't argue with it. Point A to point B. Shut your mouth and get moving. And particularly in a military environment, you know, it was like, I saw the shift right away. I saw the shift in my colleagues, like, oh man, you know, we thought he was, you know, just the party guy. And he's got some robustness to him. But the pride that I felt, has never left me. And from that day on, well, one of the very next things I did was sign up for Ironman.
Right after that?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I got a subscription to a triathlete magazine. In those days, the application was in, like you would sign up for Reader's Digest. It was, I don't know, $200 for Ironman Canada.
I wish.
And I took out a money order because that was, and I signed up. And I met a guy who had done the Ironman five times, including Kona. The most unlikely of characters, a military guy, you know, 6'4" with size 14 feet. Just awful, awful runner, awful runner. But he was so passionate about the game, and he was on the base. And we became very good friends. And you know, even to this day, he was way ahead of his time in terms of coaching. That was his big thing. And he mentored two or three of us, and we got good pretty quickly.
Amazing. And where was the first one? Where
the first Ironman I did was in Penticton.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you remember it? Like,
what? Oh, every inch of it.
Yeah.
This was 1991. I had a triathlete magazine with the pictures of the course. And so I got in my car with my camping gear, drove down from Cold Lake to Penticton. It was a 2-day drive through the Rockies, and I'm going on an adventure. Look at me, I'm a hero. My wife and kids were going to fly in. My parents flew in from Montreal. But I was in a campground with my buddy Jake here, the guy with the size 14 feet. And it was funny, we spent two weeks out there. I got out there before him. He had done the course before, and I'd never done it. So I'm just looking at the pictures and trying to orient myself. Like, yeah, okay, like there's a mountain there and a mountain there. Turns out I'd been training in completely the wrong road. No idea. It wasn't nearly as well organized as they are today, you know. In those days, you just pick a spot on the grass, put your transition stuff. There was less than 1,000 people. And only the pros, you know, really knew what to do, what they were doing. The rest of us were just characters. Anyways, when my buddy showed up, he kind of slapped me around the head. You idiot, you're on the wrong highway altogether. I thought I'm connecting with the course. I was completely going the wrong direction. Anyway, it started raining one night. So the two of us decided, well, the bikes need to stay in the tent. We'll sleep outside. And that's what we did. And that was Ironman, and I When I got out of the water, I have a picture I have pictures of those arm. When I got out of the water, I've never swam 2.4 miles in my life. And I was scared beyond, I had no idea what it really frightened me. And when I got out of the water, I'm sure the volunteer, I must've given them a cardiac arrest. I was so jacked up and pumped, and I got on I had a 6-speed Schwinn. That's what I rode on. Got a flat in the first 20 minutes. So, and only a hand pump. There was no CO2 in those days. So I rode the rest of the way. But I mean, that was everyone else. I rode with a guy that was on a mountain bike, a guy from England. And we were talking, and I just thought, every mile I'm doing is a mile more than I'd gone before. And, same on the run. And I went, my first Ironman, I went 11 hours. And I never had a problem. I never had a problem. I enjoyed it, and I'll never forget it because to this day, Ironman's not the only moniker, but I always tell myself around mile 80 of the Ironman, take a look around. Who do you see? You see any naysayers? Where are all the critics? Where are the hemophiliacs? Where are the know-it-alls? Where are they? Nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
I like it there.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
And now you've done so many of them. I'm just curious, like, you do one, you know, a lot of people say like, okay, I did it, like, check it off the bucket list. Like, what makes you keep wanting to do them and do more of them?
Well, you know, that's a loaded question. I would tell you the same thing. I did one and I you can probably tell I was quite amped up. I went back to my unit. I was, by then in 1991, I was attached to an F-18 squadron. And in those days it was all male oriented and lots of testosterone, lots of ego, but I was the only guy that had done Ironman. And there was no kidding. And I could feel it, you know. I didn't have to say anything. I didn't have to brag. I didn't have to go to the officer's mess on Friday and beat my chest. And I wasn't into it. By then I had two young kids and I really had turned into a homebody because I valued training. So I basically cut out the social drinking altogether. But to answer your question as to why I got into it, I just found it so rewarding. I felt so good about me that I thought, okay, like this is the elixir. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks about you. It matters what you think. And I started to grow up. You know, I started to mature, and I became proud of myself. So I signed up the second time, and that hurt a whole lot more. It wasn't nearly as much fun, but then I was into it by then. I mean, I was devoting, not an inordinate amount of time. I could probably afford, 10 hours a week, maybe 12 hours a week to train with I had a busy job, at the fighter weapons school in Coal Lake, and then raising two kids in diapers. But it was fun. And I had a close friend who was a neighbor up in Cold Lake, and he was on the Canadian national team short course. So he was a really good triathlete and just a great guy. And we got along well, so we would get up early and ride together, and it became a bit of a passion. And the thing that struck me at the awards banquet, I couldn't even imagine what it must be like to win an age group. I couldn't, I just thought, wow, you know, cause I know how much it hurts me, you know, like how much this is, you know, and how much I value and I respect it. I can only imagine the time and the respect that folks put into this. And so I used it. I went to an Ironman a year, whether I was deployed or not, whether I could get into shape or not. The way that I saw it was it's our vacation, and we did it. I think I went to Ironman Canada I at least 18 in a row, at least, maybe more. Every summer we packed up and we went out to Penticton. The kids have grown up there. This is just what dad does.
Mm-hmm. And what were some, like, other than the fact that you were raising a family and stuff, what were some early challenges that you had in training? Were you always coached through these Ironmans, or like what were some early lessons that you maybe learned?
Well, when I first got into it, I talked about this character, Jake, 6'4" guy with size 14. He wanted to make a run at being a professional coach. I should say, sadly, he passed away of cancer, but he was ahead of his time. It was his profession. He was a physical education recreation guy in the forces. Very well read, very, very well read, and on the cutting edge of triathlon. And so he decided, he saw something in me. He told me, like, you've got a talent for endurance, which I guess is true. So he trained the physical end of it. I seem to have a natural head for, staying in the moment, and I don't mind suffering. I actually quite enjoy it. I'll explain a little bit more about that in a bit, but the physical side of it, that was his expertise, and he brought me along, and I got pretty good at it pretty quickly. Why I say I enjoy the suffering, and I don't mean that in a masochistic way, but I feel better about myself if I've struggled a bit during the day, if I've had to overcome something. And it's true. I mean, here I am, I'm 58 years old, and it's as true today as it was back then. I've tried all kinds of shortcuts. I tried drinking the town red and doing all that kind of stuff. I tried those things to feel better. It just didn't work. You know, it didn't work. I like to suffer a bit every day. It makes me feel alive and grateful, and those are the attributes that seem to bring out the best in me. My wife still likes to hang around with me, so that's got to be something. And my kids respect me, and that was a big thing. You know, you don't have to like me. I'm not your friend, but you're gonna respect me. You got to.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's interesting that you said, like, I reflect a lot up on potential. I think it's a really interesting thing because there's so many people that I think it's a confidence thing too. But when someone recognizes something in you that you don't even see yourself or know that you have, like, it's like sometimes it takes that to flick the switch to be able to go on this ride. And who knows where you'd be if Jake didn't see that in you and kind of like notice that.
That's a good point, because I've got a good eye for it now. I see, I'm surrounded by it. Everything in my life is about, I've done all kinds of adventure racing, but I can see it in people. And what sticks out in me is not so much people's potential, but their lack of confidence. And I feel like, oh, you are in your own way, like here, let me, I stop myself because, who wants to be intrusive in anyone else's life? But I every year I promise myself two souls. I'll jump in with two souls. Let me just give you a quick example. A couple of years ago here in Tromla, I was walking away from a race, and there was an 18-year-old kid. He was volunteering at the parking lot. And the gate was closed, so he had to wait for the key. So our car was there, so I'm standing there waiting, and we get talking. And one of my sisters was with me, and he's like 18-year-old from here, from around the area, a Francophone young fella. And he says, yeah, I signed up for Ironman. You ever done a triathlon? No. Oh, man. Really? So, but we talked for about 25 minutes. By the end of it, I loved the kid. I said, you know what? I'm going to help you. No, nothing fancy. He sat in here. I gave him a wetsuit. He just sheer guts, and managed expectations, slowed him down. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. He's off and he's doing other things in his life. He's just, but he's one of these spirits. And he isn't the only one. I've met other young fellas just like him. But I enjoy that, because waking someone up is a powerful, powerful thing. Now, I'm not talking about trying to talk somebody into something.
No, yeah,
it's actually, the reverse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's like how I got my start too. I had just done an Olympic, and met Kat and Kev, and them well, yeah, and yeah. they're special people. Immediately inspired by them and just started asking all kinds of questions. And they put in my head, I could do an Ironman.
Yeah.
And then the year later, I was there on the starting line.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, and like you, it was like the best day ever. It was raining the whole day, you know, here up in Tremblant. Raining on the bike, people were miserable, and I'm just like big smile on my face, just enjoying it, just loving every minute, because there's nothing like crossing the finish. And you're right, it's like it's just for you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. At the end, they always told me like, no one's gonna ask you what time you did.
Yeah,
like
nobody cares.
All they know is that you did it.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the amount of pride you get from accomplishing that, from spending a full work day, doing something.
Yeah.
And not stop, like, you know, that's it's so, there's no better feeling than that. It's like
when early in the 90s, one of my sisters was diagnosed with cancer, and she came up on her 40th birthday, and she wanted to she was watching me do triathlons, and she does them to this day, but she wanted to do an Ironman. Graham Fraser was the owner of the race, so I got a hold of him and asked him if I could get my sister in. And he said, sure. And she went, and she became one of the featured athletes. This is before it was in vogue to feature someone. And the camera crew followed her around, and she had a great day. And it changed her life. But I told her when it was over, I said, okay, that's it. That's done. Sell the bike. You're done. Save yourself, because this will consume you. While she's on, I don't know, Iron Man number whatever, gajillion. Her, you know, but she inspired, you know, at that time she had a young son who has gone on to do all kinds of things and distinguished himself. He played for the Ottawa Red Blacks in the CFL, and he's just a great, great kid. And so it comes full circle. But why did I bring that up? I would tell anybody who just wants to have that experience, don't, you know, it's easy to get sucked into the lifestyle, but today when I go down to a transition area, it's a different experience. I listen, I can hear people, and they're focused on completely the wrong things. If you're upset with yourself after you've done this, well, all those people, that wife and husband and mom and dad, and they're just happy. They don't know the difference between 9 hours and 19 hours, other than they needed more sunblock. They're responding to you. If you're not happy, do yourself a favor and move on. Have your experience, but move on. Now, if there's something that you feel is unfinished, well, then that's on you. But don't make it everyone else's problem. And this is why my advice is, like, look, if you want to try Ironman, give it a shot, but don't be afraid to walk away. There are other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen to me while I'm still still addicted.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're still addicted. Like
I'll tell you, I don't know how this is going to sound, but it's the truth. I'm not interested in doing Ironman. I'm really not. I'm not interested in participating at all. The only reason I'm racing is because I want to win. So here's this mic on. And all kinds of, I'm telling you right now, I want to win Kona.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's the only thing that interests me. Now, it doesn't validate me. I'm just so compelled and interested to get my best out, because I really do believe that if I can get it out, regardless of the results, I just know I'll be the only one left standing. I just know it. Well, that's a hard thing to turn off.
Yeah, that's a fire in the belly.
It's a hard thing to turn off. But if I wasn't doing the work, if I wasn't putting in the training, believe me, there are so many more. I live on a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go watch the golf chat.
Yeah, that's awesome. And have you been close? Like, and we talk about winning Kona. That's the Ironman World Championship in Kona, Hawaii.
Yeah.
And how many times have you been there, and how close have you gotten? And it's winning your age group, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, okay. I should say that. So I've gone to Kona as an age group athlete 5 times. Was never close in the 4 times. I went because I qualified, and I wanted to be part of the parade and have a good experience. But I wasn't competitive. Even though I qualify in most of the Ironmans that I'd done, I just started turning the slot down because I'd had my experience, and that was the end of it. Then recently, so I've been to the Ultraman and I've won my age group there, I'm going to say 7 times. And I won the 70.3 in my age group. And I thought, you know what? Come on, brother. Finish it. Let's get the trifecta. So last year, I went to Kona with the ambition to win. And, you know, lots of things happen. It's a big race. But during the run, I ran myself into podium. I was, I think I was running in fourth spot when I had a seizure with a mile and a half to go. And I know this course. I know the Kona course very well. I knew exactly where I was. But I ended up in a seizure and I didn't finish. An ambulance came and got me, and it's a long story, a long boring story. But that was me racing. I emptied it, and I loved it. I would rather that than sixth or fifth. Yeah, I want to get my best out. So now it's become a mission here. Now I'm not gonna stop until I win an age group, and it's not. I love it. I mean, I love the game, but it's the competition that I love, and to the point that I'm willing to put other things aside. My kids are adults now. They're on their own and doing fine in life, and I've got some time, and it keeps me motivated, keeps me interested.
In shape.
And then there's that, but it's so compelling because there are so many moving parts, and the world's a big place. You know, there are other fit people out there that want that space. But I like it because, as I've said before, it's not a talking problem. It's a doing problem. So, you know, talk is cheap. But I own it now. You know, that's what I want to do. And, you know, if it ever happens, well, that'd be great. But the fact that I'm alive and I'm motivated and I'm intrigued, I think I'm richer for that.
Right.
Right off the bat.
Have you always been that competitive? And how do you, like, after you've competed that many times and that hard, is it hard to come back to do it again, to pour yourself out there again? And you know, there's so many things that come into mm-hmm. mind, you know, like
mm-hmm. It can drain you.
Yeah.
It can drain you. If you're not centered, it really can. I've seen a lot of guys come and go from this game, broken souls, you know, and I've been broken, you know, I've suffered. It's not the result, it's the pursuit. The problem, I can't lie to myself. I know that it's in there. I'm in the way. Like, I gotta let it out. And so it's a 24/7 thing now, you know, like, I can't lie to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's in there. And I'm it won't be for lack of trying.
Right.
And I'm good with whatever happens, happens. But, you know, barring any unforeseen mishaps or bad luck, here I'm off to Ireland next week that's their first Ironman in Ironman Cork. And that's our home, my parents' homeland. So that's our home soil. So I'm bringing my best, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm not 80%, I'm 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go hard. I believe it. I'm not pacing myself. I'm going. It's not enough to qualify for Kona. I want to win. I want to win there. I want to win my age group. I want to make a statement for me. And it makes my wife smile when I'm expressing myself without talking. You know, we both know that you can't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
All the money in the world can't buy truth.
It's just hard work.
It's just our theme this I work with a great coach, a guy named Mike Coughlin out of Guelph, Ontario. Just a super, super guy. He really knows what he's doing. And our theme is simply this: no mistakes. Just make no mistakes. You know what? It's so simple.
It's easy.
It's not easy.
No.
It's simple.
Yeah.
It's just not easy because you get in your own way, you know, you start to overthink things. And you get in your own way, but that concept is so simple. Just make no mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Isn't it interesting because you've done so many and you have so much experience, but there's still things you can improve? Like to have Kat and Kev talk about, I'm going to refer to them because you know them, and but they always said, like, you know, you might get one perfect day.
Oh, like, I'm still waiting for
it. Have you had it? You haven't had it yet.
I've been close. Mm-hmm. I've been close. I've had some epic days. I know it's still in here and I'd like it to be in Kona. But I didn't see it coming in an Ultraman in 2004. I still remember the run with a class athlete, a guy named Jonas Colting, and another guy named Lon Freeman. The three of us ran the double marathon, and I went, double marathon, 84K. That's the bike. The run is the bike course of Kona.
So can you break down the days for us? Yeah, for anybody listening?
Sure, you bet. Ultraman in Kona, day one is 10K swim. I'm going to say it's a 150-mile bike. I'm not sure, but it goes up to the volcano. And then day two is a 171-mile bike from the volcano down through the Red Road along the coast up to Hawi. Hawi is the bike turn for Kona Ironman. And then day three is a double marathon running from basically the bike turn to the pier. So it's the bike course. And Lon Freeman, he was a medalist in the Western States 100. I didn't know this about the guy, thank God. But I knew Jonas Colting. Jonas Colting's an ITU long course, but professional triathlete and just a class act guy. Anyway, we went out hard. And I remember the halfway point, the marathon point, the race organizer set up a window with a clock and this sort of thing. It's a marathon, you know, and it's not right in the middle of the Queen K. There's nothing around. And we got there before they were even setting it up. And we got through there in 2:59. And a 2:59. And we still had a marathon to go. And I looked over at my van, the aid station, my wife and a friend of mine, a guy named Dan. He looked at me. His face said everything. He rolls down the window. He goes, oh, you just unzipped your fly. And we duked it out. I went 6:34. It was the run of my life, 6:34 for a double marathon on the back end of that. And it was the fastest run of the day, and I'll never forget it. I felt like I've suffered there. I've done that race 9 times, and more often than not, I get in my own way. But that day, I don't know what it was, but I had wings, and those are the things that I like to think about when I think, you know, there's still something in there. I'm not making it up. It's not, I don't hope that I can win. And it's not about the winning, but I just know I'm plagued by this thing that I know deep down inside I haven't given my best yet.
Yeah, it's if you know you have it, you know, it's like that's all you got. You just at my house, you're gonna win. Like the most competitive people out there, they just have that confidence that they can do it, and that's the minute you have doubt is the minute you've already failed, you know, kind of thing.
Well, and the doubt's there. I mean, the doubt's there. That's what training's all about. Training is about removing doubt. I read this piece about an Inuit artist who, you know, he takes these big lumps of soapstone that look like just big granite rocks. And they say, you know, how do you make such beautiful sculptures? You know, whales, dolphins, bears, etc. So he looks at this thing and he says, well, it's easy. I just remove everything that's not bare. Think about that. You know, like he already sees what it's going to look like. And I'm going to tell you, that's exactly what my training is. I don't know what to do, but I know what's in the way. And I got to get rid of it. The doubt, the self-defeating attitude, the negative talk, the poor food choices, all these things. You just don't do that. And then just as we, you know, keep with the training. Don't test. I don't test myself. I don't go out and try and beat, yesterday's time. I just invest. It's an investment. Today's an investment. And with every way and every day, I'm getting better and better and better. As trite as it sounds, that's the mantra. Just don't get in the way. And in the meantime, just remove everything that's not there. And when it's time, and you'll be ready. And for me in particular, I need a coach. And look, Mike will tell you himself, I think we may have spoken twice this year. I think. We don't speak.
Yeah.
Don't have to. He sets the program. If I've got something that comes up, I'll run it by him. He's a very well accomplished athlete himself, a world champion with a bike course record holder. He's a bike course record holder in Kona for the Ultraman day one and day two. Just a superb guy. But it's not a debate. We just keep chipping away. Just keep removing everything that isn't there. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take as long as it takes.
Exactly. Well, what would you tell somebody just getting into the sport and just like, or wants to try something new, like running a marathon, like signing up for an Ironman before they even do a triathlon?
I wouldn't advise it now, only because it's not necessary. You know, there's so many starter races. And the Ironman is such a spectacle. There are so many distractions now that it's overwhelming. It wasn't like that when I started. But to your question, if you want to do something, you know, and you're asking me, I'm going to figure out almost immediately if you mean it. Now, the question is, do you want me to tell you? Or do you want me to just tell you what you want to hear? Because if your heart's not in it, like if your head, and particularly your head, if your head isn't in it, then let's regroup. Let's regroup. How to do an Ironman isn't the question. Why is the question? Why do you want to do this? And that's usually what I'm listening for. I get a fair number of folks asking me to coach them. And at first, when I first got back to Canada, I took on just about anybody, but I've stopped doing it. I'll give you an analogy that I like to use when I'm speaking. You know, you're asking me for, let's just say, you're asking me for traffic directions from Kingston, Ontario to Toronto. And I'm going to give you those driving directions. You can check in Google Maps. They're flawless. It's going to get you there every time. The problem is you're not in Kingston. You're in Kitchener. The directions are flawless, but you haven't reconciled where you're starting from. And I can't help you until you tell yourself the truth. And that's been a struggle for me when I'm coaching folks, is I end up fighting with you over something that, look, this is Dr. Phil's territory, not mine. But you're asking me, but the directions work, but you're not where you think you are. So if someone was going to ask me, I'm not going to interfere, but that's what I'm listening for. Does your behaviors match your words? Like, that's what I'd be thinking, you know, and if you're asking me for help, and it's just my opinion, by the way, I'm no expert, that's how I can help you, is by making sure that your behaviors and your actions and your words, they all line up.
Yeah, because the only person that can do it really is you, right?
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. But don't lie to yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, don't do it.
Yeah, it's so easy to like, and now with social media and stuff like that, see... Everyone's, I want to be an Ironman. Oh. I want to be an Ironman. You know, but, you know, it's not an easy day. Like I, my first one was 11 hours too. And then my second was 13. I ran a 5-hour marathon. Like my stomach shut down. I think I saw you on the course. You were helping out. And I'm like, Tony, what do I do? You're like ice, Pepsi and water and repeat. And you'll get it back. You'll get your stomach back. And I mean, I could have quit that day, you know?
Yeah,
and Kev picked me up on the course, and we finished together. But it's such a challenging thing, you know. Yeah. And no two are alike, and no. I'm sure you can attest to that.
No. No.
But it's not a joke, you know? No. It's not just like, I'm going to go and...
Yeah, not Ironman. Don't do it at Ironman because you can hurt yourself. You know, if you want to try this thing, you know, 70.3s or that, or listen, for so many reasons, if you've got a family and a profession, for so many reasons, Ironman's an investment. It's an investment. The moniker, you know, anything's possible. Okay, well, you know, they're selling a product. But just because it's possible doesn't mean you should, you know. But I don't want to get in anyone's way, you know. But manage your expectations. If you're looking for an adventure, there's an adventure. Mm-hmm. But after that, you've got to, okay, where am I? Are you in Kingston or are you in Kitchener? Mm-hmm. Like, don't fool yourself. And certainly, you know, to repeat it year after year, there's where, you know, to my eyes, I see more of that than the nice stories that you see on the TV. I see more folks getting more and more disappointed and turning inward on themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's awful. It's not a measure of who you are, you know. You know, your result is just a result.
Right.
What you do with it is the measure. Now, if you're going to keep going back, okay.
Keep getting off the canvas.
Yeah. We need maybe some intervention.
I know you mentioned that you can take quite a bit of pain, you know, in training and also in racing. But you did face like a challenging injury or accident in your career. Can you kind of tell us about that? And because I read about it in an article, and it's sounded horrific. Like a
It was. I was in the military, and I had done a year's posting over to Afghanistan, and that is the subject of another conversation altogether. But I was immobile for a year. You know, you're not out training. You know, you're not running around Afghanistan. It wasn't a fun. I was on the ground. I wasn't flying, which every other deployment I've ever been on was flying. I was in the ground, it felt like I was in a prison. And I had reconciled myself, like when I get out of here, I'm getting fit, and I'm going to go race Ultraman. And I think this was 2011. So I registered, and I got back to Canada in at the end of July. And Ultraman is in November. So they gave me August, September, October, you know, 3 months. But I, you know what? I'm grateful. And oh, by the way, I got posted to Colorado. So Colorado's at altitude. You know, Colorado Springs is 7,000 feet. So my wife and I got there at the beginning of August, and I'm chomping at the bit to get out and do some training. And it's a bit of a struggle, but I'm out there. And starting a new job, and you know, there's a lot of stress, but I don't care because I'm gonna do this event. And we weren't there 3 weeks, and I was up on, anyone who's lived in Colorado Springs will tell you that probably the safest place to ride is on the United States Air Force Academy. Beautiful campus, gorgeous roads, and I'm riding up there one weekday, and there's a construction crew working right in front of a fire hall. And one of the young construction fellas was moving a truck, and he didn't see me. And I'm coming down the hill, and he ran right over me. And the good news was that it happened right in front of the fire hall, where all the paramedics were out on the front yard doing their training. And so I hit the deck, and I went right through his windscreen. He hit me head on. Smashed the bike, smashed me. I ended up over on the sidewalk. An air ambulance was on its way, but these medics were right there and stabilized me, and I ended up in the hospital, and it was a bit of a nightmare. So three surgeries later on my legs, and, you know, here I am. But at the time, It was demoralizing because there goes Ultraman. And I remember thinking, once the morphine kicked in, well you know, I could see my left foot was pointed the other direction. And I thought, you know, well, okay, just turn that back. Well, you're going to be all right, brother. Well, we can still do it. I'm an idiot.
Was that the only thing in your mind? Like, how am I going
to
get back?
Yeah, I wanted, you know, it was important to me. Like even when I was on the ground, I remember thinking, get up. You got to get up. You got to get up. This isn't happening. Get up. And the injuries were what you could probably expect from hitting a truck head on. But I was in good care. I had good care. It took me a year to come back, and I had the best orthopedic surgeon. I think I was mentioning earlier, a guy works for the Denver Broncos as well as the U.S. Olympic ski team. The first time we went into the waiting room, and the front line of the Denver Broncos, you know, all those Coke machines with head on it, they're all there because they're all getting stuff. And Greg Norman, the golfer, he's right. Getting a shoulder, like, I'm in the right place. Mm-hmm. I am in the right place. So I had three different reconstructive surgeries on both legs. And I was in two casts for 6 months, and then started to walk, rehab and walk, and I took it seriously. The founder of ART, that technique, you'll see it all over Ironman, ART, A-R-T, active release therapy, a guy named Mike Leahy, his office is in Colorado Springs, so, and he's an Ironman, and I knew the guy, he's an ex-Air Force pilot. So I got a referral to him, and I was in to see him, and for a year straight, one of his clinicians, a girl named Casey, a great, great, great modality. She, and there were all kinds of professional athletes in there, and I just invested every ounce of energy. My ambition was to get back to 100%, and that's what I've been doing ever since. I retired shortly after that. I had 33 years of military service. The kids were grown. Yeah, I looked at my life, you know, okay, what's important to us now? You know, I mean, I can carry on with a career, I guess, but I love racing. I want to go back, or at least, you know, die trying. So I'm here I am, you know, and it's a work in progress.
What was the diagnosis from the medical staff? Like, did they believe that you would get back to a full recovery?
The surgeon that worked on me, he wasn't saying much other than, "Oh man, your bones are strong," because my brake lever of carbon fiber brake lever of my aero bar went into my femur, but my femur didn't break. It didn't break. It scratched it up. He said, "Yeah, it should have broke. I mean, you hit that head on. So your bones are strong." And this is from two-dimensional, you know, I'm not a lateral sport, you know, volleyball or basketball. And running is a two-dimensional straight line, and cycling the same thing. And he says, "You know, that the years of it, your knees are," he says, "are other than this, are perfect, perfect." Now, I've got, cadaver parts all over the, whoever's parts I've got in here. I'm sure they're going, "Holy shit, we didn't sign on for this." But, LCLs and ACLs, and it's all been replaced. But I did, I had to do some physiotherapy at Carson, Fort Carson, which is an Army base. And they deal with, you know, folks who are coming back from war, all broken up. And I just felt like a putz, you know, like, man, I just got hit by a car. I mean, these folks they're coming back hard. And I wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible, just out of sheer respect. And the physio that I was working with, Captain Army guy, he was saying, "Well, you're not going to run. You know, that's out." And that was it for me. Like, I'm not coming back here. Nothing personal. But I'm going to find the physio that says I am going to run. And I did. Casey Navira, you know, she's a physio in Colorado Springs. And we work on it until I was. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm still working at it.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I guess you don't err on the side of the people that say running's bad for your knees.
Oh no! I've got proof. I've been running my entire life, and it took that to get a look inside. And the doc told me, he said, "Well, your bones are strong, and no damage. I had, up until that point, I had no meniscus damage, I had no cartilage damage, because there's no torsion on it. It's two dimensional."
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, for sure.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too, because you think, you know, somebody tells you, you know, your hips are this or your knees are that, you start to think about it, and mm-hmm. Yeah, they do kind of hurt. I'm calling bull. Yeah. No.
What's your greatest accomplishment to date? I know you got a lot of accolades and done so many things, but is there one that really stands out to you?
My family, you know, my family, my kids, and my wife, but my kids respect me, always have. My son's 31 and my daughter's 29, and you don't get to 31 years of age without having some bumps and bruises along the way, or 29, and growing up's not easy. And I see it in them. They respect me. And that I'm proud of myself because, life gets in the way. And I didn't always know what I was doing. You know, I didn't know. I just did what I thought was the right thing to do. But, and oftentimes that was keep my mouth shut and lead by example. But it seems to have worked. And I'm proud of that. And I respect it, and I like it today. Like, you know, my kids. I'm gonna go to Ireland. I'll be in the top 50. Mm. What do you think of that? How's that for brash?
Yeah,
2,000 people. But I will.
Yeah,
I will.
Yeah,
and it's not. I don't expect it's not owed to me. But if everything goes well and I'm able to unleash this thing that's inside of me, good luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and my kids feel it. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of it.
Yeah, it must be cool to watch your dad take on this thing. You know, I don't know if they've taken on endurance sports at all or anything like that. But you've been in the game for so long, you're a legend in the sport. I'm sure you've made tons of friendships and stuff throughout. Cause you've seen this sport grow from nothing to the way it is today, you know?
Yeah. Well, a lot of marketing. I love it. It's a great thing. I don't need any t-shirts and I'm not in it. You know, I love winning, so to speak, but winning, as I've tried to express, is in getting out of my own way and letting my best come out. It's a simple concept. It hasn't been easy. I have to work at it every day.
Right.
But, on one of my, I did a race series called the Race Across America. I've done that 3 times. And the third time in 2010, my son came as part of the crew. So he got to sit up front for this thing. And I was telling him the first time I did it in 2006, I didn't know what I was doing.
Can you explain what it is?
Race Across America is a bike race. It's a transcontinental bike race that starts in Oceanside, California. And in 2006, it finished at Trump Towers in Atlantic City, nice. New Jersey. 3,050 miles. And it's nonstop, crosses 14 states, 4 time zones. So through the Rockies, through the Appalachians, through the desert. We went through a tornado that year in 2006. I honestly didn't know what I was getting into. Other than I knew the race, but I just thought, you know, being supported, how hard can it be? And I say that tongue in cheek. It is 6 hours into the race, I was cooked. I was done. I was out of ideas. 6 hours in. It was the crew that got me through.
Right.
But in going through that, I had an MP3 player with 39 songs on it. And I listened to those 39 songs over and over and over again. And my son had built the playlist. Back in those days, he was a budding musician, and we had the same tastes. So anyways, he had embedded one song, St. Elmo's Fire, which I hate that song. And he got a great big laugh out of it, and I had to hear it everywhere. But another one that he had put in, I thought was his song, because I'd heard him playing it. He plays guitar, played piano. He's a very, very accomplished musician. And I'd heard him practicing it in the piano in the house for years. It's The Scientist by Coldplay. And I wasn't paying attention to the music. I just thought that was him. And I didn't realize that Arizona had mountains. So coming out of the desert out of California, this is day two, still haven't been to bed, and it just been 120 degrees in the day, 60 degrees at night. That's a 60 degree temperature differential. And I didn't bring any winter gear. I didn't bring any. So I'm freezing at night, freezing. And then the sun come up. Oh, and I remember the third day, we're climbing up this pass. I can't remember the name of it. But I was struggling. I was struggling. It was 5:30 in the morning or whatever. The van's behind me. No one knows what to do behind me. They're just as, and I'm suffering. I don't know how I'm going to get up to the top. And we've got music playing out of the speakers of the van, and the scientist comes on. So I'm telling him, it's my son, Gail. I said, okay, talk to me, boy. I need help, man. I'm hurting, and I need help. And I got to the top. And so I told him that when I got home. I told him that story. So in 2010, so many things had happened between 2006 and 2010. And we get to that spot, and he puts on A Hero by Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah.
And he's sitting in the front. And I look back at the boy, you know, and it's my dad. You know, like, this is on his face. I'm not going to let you down. But I came in 2010, I came in with the same fire I have now. Like, I finished fourth overall. And if the race had been longer, I would have won. I just ran out of real estate. I was on fire. But he couldn't have stopped me. And I knew what my role was. I'm the monkey on the bike. Everyone else does the thinking. But we were drilled. But that connection, that's what I'm trying to express to you. Those are the things that I'm proud of. They're nonverbal. It's not me bigging myself up. You know, I if I have to brag, I've already lost.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, you said that your family's your greatest accomplishment, and it sounds like that look that your son gave you is like a really inspirational moment. Is that are those the people that inspire you the most to continue moving forward? Or yeah. is there somebody that stands out in your mind, like through this process, said something to you, or that really hit, it really hit home?
To be honest with you, the things that it's not inspire, but aggravate me. If somebody says something that aggravates me, I'll ruminate on that for days, even to this day. But that's the way I handle it, instead of, you know, fighting back or whatever. But so to your point, like, I'm not looking to be inspired. I'm already inspired. Sometimes I need a kick in the arse. So you know, if somebody says and the other thing too is that I hear what I want to hear. So it may not have been meant in the intention that I assume, but you know, sometimes I'll pick a fight in my own head just to get me aggravated. Mm-hmm. Just because I like to fight.
Ironman, Ultraman, ride across America. Like, do you have any other things that you want to accomplish? Like, I know you want to win your age group. Yeah. Is there any other adventures that you have in mind that you want to tackle, like endurance?
Yeah.
Endurance wise?
So, I think I may have mentioned to you, I'm moving to Europe in September. Mm-hmm. And I've been eyeing this bike ride, the Pamir Highway. It's up in Southwest Asia. It's the highest highway in the on the planet, and it's not all paved. It's not a race. It's just a survival thing.
Okay,
but I want to go, and I there are different distances along the way, and I would eventually like to do the whole thing, right from Iran all the way to Beijing. You know, I'd like to go across the continent before I come home.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah, I'd like to do it.
I know you do. You do talks as well. You do. Do you do any like public speaking?
I
think I read as well.
Yeah.
What's some of the messaging that you like to share with people? Like, what are some of the points that you'd like to share with anybody that you speak to in your talks?
I mean, I'm not going to invent anything. I like to speak about the power of belief. I'm not big on hope, you know. Like, I hope for a lot of things, but hope isn't a method. Process, planning and preparation, those are key variables. So when I speak to, for example, triathlon groups, surprisingly, and it just happened here because the 70.3 is coming into town here in a couple of weeks. So I spoke to a couple of different clubs that are here, and I speak about the 14 days leading up to the race, and folks are surprised to know how much planning and preparation a guy like me puts in. And people think I just press a button and go. But the fact is, by addressing the stressors and by addressing some of the things that in advance of the race, it reduces stress, and it gives me it's like a checklist for starting an airplane or for anything else. If you came into the dentist's office and today he said, you know what, checklist out the window. Today we're going to do it by seat of the pants. I've done enough of these. Would you want that guy working on your teeth? And I wouldn't either. And so if you're dragging your family all the way to a half Ironman, like, is that what you want to give them? Put in the time, 14 days. Pick and I talk about that process, and that's what I find is the most well received. And it's not what folks expect. It's not as hard as you think. It's simple. It's a simple concept. Not always easy to execute, because when you look at something and you look at something like RAM, 5,000 kilometers, all those stats I told you, 14 states, four time zones, you start to think of those things. They just become so overwhelming, you're going to choke. And now you're hyperventilating. Well, it's the same thing when you start a 5150 or a sprint or anything. You start to think about what's ahead of you, and you start asphyxiating. And so by breaking it down to its constituent parts and addressing each one of the potential weaknesses, you've already inoculated yourself against trying to eat this 5,000-pound marshmallow in one bite. Take it one bite at a time. Reset. And in life, it doesn't matter what it is, art, entertainment, literature, aviation, you pick it. One step at a time. Process. Don't think about the end. The end's coming anyway. Just focus on process. And I like to talk about it because I believe it and I live it. And when I get in my way, when I try to rush it, that's when, it still happens. Mm-hmm. I get in my own way.
How would you like to be remembered in the sport? Like, what kind of athlete would you say that you are if someone says Tony O'Keefe?
Consistent.
Okay. Yeah, it's like consistency is key, right?
Consistent.
Yeah, and so many times, like, I find, people struggle with that. I run one day a week, or I run mm-hmm. 4 days this week, and then two mm-hmm. days this week, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not a recipe for success.
No, in anything.
Yeah, exactly.
In anything.
Do you feel like the lessons you've learned in triathlon have given back to your own life? Other aspects as well?
Yeah. I wish I was wise enough to have applied them in my professional life. I rushed work so that I could get on my bike, or I could run home, or, I'd be in a meeting or something, and I'm daydreaming about gear ratios or tire pressures, and I look back now and I see, like, dude, man, if you just, you would have been equally as powerful. You would have been more powerful. But listen, it's a nice problem to have. It's a non-problem. So the point is, I'm still learning. I'm still learning how to apply the lessons that I'm learning.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And it's never too late, to learn new things. And I mean, with every experience, you should learn something completely different.
Dude, I'll tell you this. This is, I'm going into Kona here this year if I'm lucky enough. And I know that you believe me when I tell you I'm going to bring my best. But the only thing that I know really for sure is I don't know much. That's what I've learned. I don't know much. I'm learning. I know what not to do. And even then, I'll come up with a new one. Mm-hmm. My theme is, let's make no mistakes.
Mm-hmm. No mistakes. I'll end with this. What does this all mean to you? And like, even as far as like winning, like you want to win. What would that mean to you?
I guess it would validate that inner voice that I don't know where it came from, because I was raised well, but there's an inner voice that I heard that I wasn't good enough. You know, I don't know where it comes from. But I don't need inspiration. But if you try to control me or own me or manipulate me in any way, I'll amplify that tenfold. Shut my mouth and feed it back to you. I don't know why. I don't know. But it's important to me to face that.
Mm-hmm. For you.
Yeah, for me. It's important for me. I love taking on whatever that little dude is. I love it. He's in here somewhere. I don't know where he came from, but I love taking him on and beating him down.
Well, I gotta say, like, this talk has been extremely inspirational for me. Your grit, your determination, all that. It's clear in your the way you speak and the passion is definitely there. I wish you well in Ireland. And
thank you, man.
I know you're definitely gonna put it all out there like you always do. And I just wish you the best of luck and look forward to following you. And thanks for having us here again.
You're very welcome. And good luck to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
This episode is brought to you by WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. Whatever your experience, age, or identity, you're welcome to join us at the base of Mount Royal every Monday at 7 p.m. Just look for the group of smiling faces next to the monument. Some run fast, some run slow. Who you'll meet, you never know. If you want to learn more, visit their website, iamarunner.ca, and check their Instagram, at WRGRuns. Hope to see you out there. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram, at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. La Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi. And hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.